Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Friday, November 11th, and we made it to the end of the week. Heading into a beefy, beefy Week 10 schedule. Oh, my God. I mean, we had a beautiful time with all those bye weeks last week. Now we're chock full again, okay? There's no going outside. There's no fun. It's just writing and stats and analyzing and all that nonsense. So here to preview this intense Week 10 slate is two of my favorites. One is Charles McDonald, not making his Yahoo Fantasy Football podcast debut. I think I've had you on like three or four previous iterations of the show, but this is the first time you, as an official Yahoo employee, a colleague, a brother, are on the show with me in this iteration. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm definitely a little tired. You know, I think we hit the halfway point of the season. I'm feeling it a little bit, but it's Friday. I'm ready for the weekend. I'm ready to bring in the weekend by talking to you guys. It's a first time here as an official Yahoo employee.
Love it. We are very excited to have you. And of course, also joining me is a usual clown here. It's Andy Behrens. That's right. You're royalty on the waiver show. You're just a typical jester here on the preview show. What's going on, Andy?
Yeah, just a peasant. That's fine. No, that's fine. We've entered the Justin Fields era in the NFL. So I am reborn as a fantasy analyst. I'm so excited.
Beautiful. All right. Well, we've got four teams on by. We've got the Bengals, Patriots, Jets, and Ravens. But we do have a beefy Week 10 preview here. Let's get it started. What we do here, if you're not familiar with the show, we go game by game. The two knuckleheads here give me one thing you need to know from this game, and then we end up talking about the whole damn game. Anyways, we go like 70 minutes on the pod, producer Lord Podcast slacking me on the side like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. So we got a lot to talk about here. Let's get right into it. We've got Seahawks at Buccaneers over there in Germany this week. Charles, I'll start with you. What do the people need to know about this game?
I think what you need to know about this game is that the Seahawks weirdly have like an MVP caliber quarterback this year. It's like the most unlikely MVP performance that I've seen so far with Geno Smith. He's a guy who probably didn't get a fair shot with the Jets in the past and is more than making up for that now with Seattle because, I mean, he's playing better than Russell Wilson is easily in Denver, and I think he's kind of played himself into maybe he can be Seattle's long-term answer at quarterback for the next few years. If he can continue like making plays against a Bucs defense that's pretty good, I know last week they shut down a pretty bad Rams offense, but they've done that to most teams they've played this year. If he can continue to do that, I think he's probably going to end up seeing himself in some legit MVP conversations towards the end of the season.
Yeah, especially now with Josh Allen's injury, that's going to open up like a bit of room there to climb the ranks. I cited a piece that our mutual friend Derek Klassen wrote on Football Outsiders, and he followed it up with the thought that, that this is kind of like a Ryan Tannehill when he got to Tennessee, like an out of nowhere became, you know, like their long-term-ish starting quarterback, like played himself into a new contract. I actually think that comparison might be better than my old comparison, which was this feels a lot like Ryan Fitzpatrick's year with the Jets because it was just this like random eruption year with like two good receivers. But I actually kind of feel like since then, Geno has proven himself to be even better than just like a random flash in the pan, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember back to when Ben McAdoo, was coaching the Giants, he wanted to bench Eli Manning for Geno Smith. And
right side of history.
Yeah,
he was definitely on the right side of history there. And, you know, workplace politics kind of happened and Eli Manning got to take back over as the starting quarterback. But, it's interesting to see him get a shot because I remember when we were on draft Twitter way back in the day, Geno was a guy who people thought was a pretty talented quarterback prospect, and he never really got a chance in either New York spot. And now a decade later, we're seeing him play well in Seattle. So to me, this looks better than what Ryan Fitzpatrick was doing with the Jets. Like it looks like a more sustainable style of play where you're not just like preying on Brandon Marshall to go get jump balls. Like you're actually making plays and finding holes in the defense and making accurate throws down the field. So yeah, Seahawks top 10 quarterback, getting like top 5 play this year. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, he's just running the offense, man. Andy, on the other side of the ball, this whole season has been like a Pete Carroll victory lap. He's obviously victory lapping over the offensive side, as Charles just put it. You know, he's like subtweeting Russell Wilson kind of quietly every single week. But the cherry on top here, Andy, as you put it here, like the Seahawks defense suddenly coming around at this point.
Yet not just coming around, but like over the last 4 weeks, you can compose a pretty reasonable argument that no defense is playing better. They last 3 weeks, they've allowed 4.2 yards per play, which is the lowest rate in the league. And it's not like they've faced, you know, the Texans, the Colts, whatever. Like it's a real schedule. And this is coming immediately after they gave up something like 84 combined points to Detroit and the Saints. They were legitimately, like, for a month in this season, they were a defense that you were just desperate to see on the schedule, right? Like, if your dudes were playing the Seahawks, you were like, oh, yeah, that's the tiebreaker. I gotta start these guys. And they flipped it completely. They are suddenly a somewhat difficult matchup. And this feels like, I don't know, the total in this game is like 44.5, 45. I don't know that we get there unless the Seahawks get us there. Because both of these defenses are obviously pretty good. But Seattle has just been playing. I don't off the top of my head, I don't remember a situation where I had convinced myself that a defense was maybe the worst in the league, and then it immediately turned around in such a stark way.
Yeah, I definitely can't remember that either, but it's just like the young talent kind of coalescing around Pete Carroll, who's a proven defensive mind. How do you think the Bucs attack this defense, if they can at all? Because one big change we've seen sort of in the offense, you know, I pointed this out a few weeks ago, that Todd Bowles came out and said, like, we got to see if the old guys can still play and if the young guys can play. And when he said that, if you were just looking at the offense, there's obviously guys you could point to on defense too. If you just look at the offense, it's like, okay, one old guy who's not performing so well, oldish guy, Leonard Fournette, and then like Rashad White is somebody a lot of people want to see on the field. That's been sort of a bit of a changing of the guard there. And Lenny's pissed about it too. Like he's letting it out in the media that he's not happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you are clearly, you know, on a per touch basis, one of the better players at your position in the league, to really grouse about this publicly, but he's not. I mean, he's not playing well. And it's not as if Rashad White is, you know, doing like Tony Pollard stuff on limited touches. He's not. He hasn't had a tremendous season, but he is the only person who seems to be handling this situation like a grown-up in any way. And it, you know, we've talked about Rashad White enough before. Like, he was just one of my favorite prospects. I think he can do anything that you would want a modern running back to do. It hasn't been perfect on the field to this point, but he is coming off his first game with double digit touches. He didn't really play an unusual number of snaps by his recent standards or anything like that, but he was on the field late in the game, like in the game deciding drive. He was playing. That was good to see. Also on that game deciding drive, like they built the whole offense around like Scotty Miller and Kate Otten. Suddenly that was wild too. But yeah, I gotta believe we're gonna see a little bit more Rashad White, if only because Leonard Fournette has just been so like relentlessly ordinary.
Next game up, smooth transition from the Russell Wilson subtweets right into the Russell Wilson game here. Broncos at Titans. Titans are 2.5-point favorites. We have, as expected, a 36.5 over under. Charles, I mean, if you want to talk about like fun fantasy games, this ain't it.
Oh, no. This is not it at all. Because as bad as the Broncos offense has been, their defense has been good. You know, when the Broncos made this trade for Russell Wilson, the idea was, hey, well, we have a defense that's ready to win the Super Bowl. We put in Russell Wilson, we'll be where we need to be. The defense has held up their end of the bargain, like, in a very big way this season. It's not a stretch to say they're the best defense in the NFL. Don't think the Titans will qualify as the best offense in the NFL. I know somehow they were able to go to Kansas City on the road, push that game to overtime, and they converted one third down the entire game. I don't know like what kind of magic Mike Vrabel has those guys working through, but they seem to be competitive every single game. You know, I would be afraid to. I feel like first of all, let me say this. I'm not very good at fantasy football. Like, I'm not good at all. But if I had any players that were a part of this game, I would hesitate in starting them because one, on the Broncos offense side, I mean, that's just been a cesspool this year. There's nothing good there. And on the flip side, with the Titans offense going against the Broncos defense, there's not really anything for the taking there. Patrick Surtain might be the best cornerback in the NFL, and they got a lot of good players too. So this is a wasteland game.
Yeah, I wrote about Pat Surtain and like the number one receivers he's erased at certain points this year. A few weeks ago, my stats column, who's he going to erase here? Chris Conley, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, those dudes like erased themselves last week against the Chiefs. Even when Malik Willis put the ball at a decent spot, like those guys can't make plays. It is worth noting Ryan Tannehill back full at practice. Like he's probably going to be back in this game. I mean, I think that's probably better for the Titans offense, but still no one there in the passing game for fantasy. Obviously you're playing Derrick Henry, but Andy, Charles is right. Ideally, you'd love to avoid this game in fantasy, but we are gross here. Okay, we're total. We've called you what, the Duke of dumpster diving before on the waiver show. So let's dive into the dumpster here in the Broncos offense. Is there anything we can get excited about here?
Excited is a little strong. We can add Greg Dulcich and feel that we have resolved the tight end position for a week or two, right? Like he's just been good in every game so far. He's made a little bit of noise, right? He makes his NFL debut. He scores a 39-yard touchdown. The following week, he sees 9 targets. It was 87 yards in the London game. Like he's been good. And he's playing well at a position that has like 2 guys. So anybody can sneak into like that top 8, top 10 status at tight end. So I think Dulcich is there. We also get, I guess, like our first exciting look at what this backfield after adding Chase Edmonds. We'll see if he's a thing. Oh. It's just a brutal matchup, right? It's Tennessee's a great run defense. Chase Edmonds has been just an abysmal player this year. Like nobody's been worse on a per touch basis. So we'll see if the Broncos decide that guy is the player to add an explosive element to the offense.
I'm at least curious about the receiver split too, because in the previous 3 games before the bye, you mentioned Greg Dulcich, clear cut role there, second on the team in targets with 17. First has been Jerry Jeudy. There's been a pretty good gap between him and Cortland mm-hmm. Sutton in those 3 weeks, and that's really not how it started when Jeudy was banged up. Cortland Sutton, in his last 3 games, 6 catches for 50 yards. Not per game, total. 6 catches for 50 yards, 3.1 yards per target. It's been pretty rough, which, I mean, I think Sutton is just like, he's okay. He's not a great number one receiver like folks were kind of billing him this year. I talked about that a lot this offseason, and I don't know. I'm still like not 100% sure where I fall down on Jerry Jeudy, but you know, 26% of the team targets, 28.7% of the team air yards in that 3-game stretch. Like I think he might get into like the every week wide receiver 3 discussion, but that's about all you're looking for in this offense. So we can keep it moving. Next game up here, Browns at Dolphins. Andy, immediately Jeff Wilson jumps right into a big time role for this team.
Yeah, didn't see it coming. We knew that he was going to be like, I don't know, I thought he was kind of a low-key winner at the trade deadline, right? Because he was buried in San Francisco, and then he went to a place where we assumed he needed a Raheem Mostert injury to have serious fantasy value. But it turns out that, you know, between the trust that Mike McDaniel has in him and his familiarity with the offense as it already existed, like they just threw him right in. And it's a 50-50 split, right? Like he out-touched Mostert, out-gained him. The snaps were basically even. Like they're all of a sudden like a really difficult pair to rank. They throw to them both. So like Wilson is all of a sudden a factor and somebody that I think we're going to be flexing for a while. And this is, you know, the Browns are not a stay-away matchup. So that's pretty exciting as well.
No, definitely not. They've been one of the worst run defenses, at least in the NFL. Charles, you know, you're on a fantasy podcast when, you know, you jump right in. It's like, oh, Browns and Dolphins. And the first thing we talk about is freaking Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, I was like, who's a crap? Not, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I think he's a great football player. Jeff Wilson. What are we doing here? Like, how about the same offense as Tyreek
Hill? Oh, I'm sorry. You thought we were going to talk about Nick Chubb? No, we're not going to talk about Nick Chubb.
But yeah, this is like the opposite of the last game we talked about, because I don't really foresee either of these defenses having a whole lot of success, especially given, you know, the type of offensive talent we're talking here. Nick Chubb should stampede through the Dolphins defense. And on the flip side, you know, the Browns secondary is interesting because they do have like name brand talent. When you're talking about Denzel Ward, Greg Newsome, Greedy Williams, John Johnson, Grant Talbot, but you know, as a whole, that secondary group has not played well, really at all this year, but played well at all this year. So, When you look at just the coaching mismatch between Mike McDaniel and Joe Woods, the Browns defensive coordinator, like I would expect this to be another 30-point game for the Dolphins, you know, barring someone gets hurt. But it's been amazing just to see how quickly like Mike McDaniel has been able to come in and kind of set precedent. Like, yeah, we're gonna score a whole lot of points. You guys are gonna be wide open, and we're gonna have it with the two fastest wide receivers in football. And I don't see why this week would be any different for them.
Browns have sort of not a complete transition, but they've gone really, really zone heavy the last 2 weeks. They've been the fifth heaviest zone coverage team in the NFL over the last 2 weeks. Like, I think that can maybe help this defense, right? And nobody plays man coverage against the Dolphins. Like, Tua is one of the lowest in terms of dropbacks versus man coverage, because you tell you what, you line up against Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and man coverage, you know what they're going to do? They're going to be wide ass open, right? And we've seen that plenty of times this year, even when teams don't. This offense is incredible because these two are, you know, they're probably the best wide receiver duo in the NFL right now. They're certainly the most dynamic. They're certainly the most hard, like the most difficult to defend. On the Browns side, I mean, either one of you guys can tell me how you feel about this. Dalton Del Don is like dead set on Jacoby Brissett being like a top 10 quarterback this week in fantasy. It's just the excitement of this game, and you know, the matchup is really good. I've got Josh Allen on like all my good fantasy teams, so I'm like, hey Dalton, give me more of what you're selling there about Jacoby Brissett. If this is gonna save, this is gonna save me.
It's Jacoby Brissett though. Like, if you get a stinker, you're not allowed to be surprised.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's like, last week, I got all excited about MVS against the Titans, and I was like, you know what? He ends up with nothing, quite literally nothing. And it's like, you know what? That's exactly right. You're not allowed to be mad about that. You get in bed with bad players, like, and they give you nothing. You're not allowed to be mad about that. That's
I mean, he gave you 12 yards in a game when Patrick Mahomes dropped back 78 times. So that's that's something, right?
1.8% targets per route run. I mean, just peak cardio club type of stuff.
Just getting cardio out there.
Yeah, at least he's getting his steps in. All right, next game up here, we got Saints at Steelers. Andy, there's been a lot of Jalen Warren buzz. I feel like this has happened, but we've seen this story before, only for it to not mean anything.
Good God.
Yeah, I don't know that this. Oh yeah, you thought we were talking. Jokes on you. Like, find a good player in this game.
Yeah,
we start right off with Jalen Warren before this. Yeah, like there have been actually some reports this week that don't necessarily rely on Mike Tomlin quotes about Jalen Warren seeing a greater percentage of the workload. Like, all of this is just sort of an indictment of Najee Harris. It's not even necessarily excitement about Jalen Warren. It's just that Najee has been, so unproductive on pretty significant workload. Like Jalen Warren is averaging 2.3 yards more per touch than Najee Harris is on the season. Again, not that Warren is doing anything special necessarily, but it also feels like one of those situations where maybe, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when there was like a low level of excitement for a changing of the guard in that backfield. It still feels like it's just local reporters asking leading questions of Mike Tomlin, and then he tries to say some nice things about Jalen Warren, and then we're spitting this into, aha, like there's going to be a real changeover. I'm not sure that's going to happen, because when Jalen Warren himself talks about it, he's like, oh, Najee's our guy. I'm just here to rotate. I'm just here to relieve him and compliment him. So I'm not 100% sure this is going to happen, but in a deep league, I think you probably want to have Jalen Warren stashed already in case it does.
I mean, listen, just we're really slinging through mud here at this point, because I don't want to get excited about anybody in this high school offense.
Yeah.
This
is bad.
Charles, obviously you watch a lot of film on offenses. I think it's the worst designed offense, like worst conceptually in the entire NFL. Agree or disagree?
It's up there. I mean, it's crap. It's just crap. even, you know, going back to college, it's not like Matt Canada has been this guy that's been, you know, a super duper successful offensive coordinator. I mean, like, he's had his moments in his seasons where things have kind of clicked for him when they have a lot of talent. But, you know, I don't think people look at him as like, you know what, this is a guy that we have to have running our offense. And you look at what they're doing in Pittsburgh, it's just, yeah, I don't really know how many guys would have a lot of success with the personnel that they've been given, especially like on the offensive line and maybe a quarterback too. I don't know. We'll see with Kenny Pickett. I don't know about that one. They're just kind of in a space where they don't really know what they want to be, but none of it is creative. It's like fake creative. Like, we're going to shift a whole bunch before the snap, but then we'll just run inside zone or something like that. It's not good. And trust me, I've exposed myself to too much of this, because in one of my fantasy leagues, I drafted Najee Harris with a first round pick, and not having a good time watching that unfold.
No, not having a good time. Any hope, though, for a guy like George Pickens coming off his, you know, post-bye rookie bump? I mean, that guy is obviously really talented. He showed extremely well. I hope they get him to stop. I mean, just absurd, the go routes. Enough with the go routes already, like with Kenny Pickett, too. I mean, it's just him and Johnson are like top five in terms of go routes on the season. It makes just no sense at all. Pickens theoretically should be, more targets pushed his way with Chase Claypool out the door. Although Mike Tomlin said in a press conference, like, oh, not much is going to change with Chase Claypool out the door, which, I mean, rousing endorsement for Chase Claypool there.
Yeah. George, he's good. I think they should throw him the ball more. And, you know, the benefit of playing on, like, what I personally think is the worst team in the NFL this season, you're going to be down a lot. So, you know, I don't know how much juice Kenny Pickett is going to get out of these pass attempts, but the attempt volume should be there. And if Claypool's gone, Mike Tomlin can say, you know, not much is going to change, but like the math has to change just a little bit on who is going to fill whatever percent of targets that he had. I think you should go to George. And I also think the Steelers, like, they're kind of at a point where you might as well start throwing to George, because it's not like you win anything this year. So why not start developing guys for the future? But, you know, they might not see it that way.
No, maybe not. Before we move on here, just the Saints, Andy, they feel like we can talk about the only two good players. Like, I swear to God, Charles, we won't bring up like Tre'Quan Smith or Marquez Callaway. And like, let's break those guys down in their individual matchups.
Let me tell you about Mark Ingram and his.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Right in the prime of his powers. No, but anyways, Chris Olave, I love his matchup this week. Talked about it in a video earlier this week, where the Steelers are one of only five teams that have allowed 70 plus explosive plays on the year, and most of those have been through the air.
Yeah, I think Olave is the guy that we should be talking about. We wrote, you know, our sort of collaborative bold predictions piece this week, and mine was Olave as the wide receiver one for the week. He's been like this great. I mean, he's obviously had some really nice moments. He's had some big games, but he's been also one of the great, like, theoretical receivers in the game, because he's the air yards king. And I think it just all comes together this week. Pittsburgh has given up, you know, not that these stats are super important, but they have given up the most fantasy points on a per game basis to opposing wide receivers, 13 touchdowns to opposing wideouts, six separate individual games where people have gone over 100 yards against them. And sometimes not just a little bit over 100 yards, but like way over 100 yards. So if there's a Chris Olave, like, two touchdown, 155 yard game out there, it's this week against this defense.
And that guy's so good too. I mean, I'm telling you, that guy is like a 10-year pro right now. He's been an unbelievable receiver. I think people still don't realize just how good he is as an individual talent, Chris Olave. So let's move on here. NFC North, Lions at Bears. Charles, this one, I challenge you to find a star here to talk about.
I mean, Is DeAndre Swift playing?
I mean, he's got to be one of the most frustrating players in fantasy right now, because he is going to play, but I don't think he's ever going to be like 100% this year. So yes, he is playing.
He played like 10 snaps last week and he gained 50 yards. Like he looked good.
I kind of wonder if at this point too, like, Dan Campbell just maybe prefers Jamal Williams because he's like a big time grinded out back. You know, they're in this game where, all right, we've got a lead on Aaron Rodgers. That game was like 0-0 though for a long time. Like, yeah, we got a lead on Aaron Rodgers. Like, let's just grind this thing out with Jamal Williams.
I mean, I think the only player that is actually has me excited to watch is Justin Fields. He's started to figure it out. I think he's, you know, pulling the trigger on things that he was not earlier in the season. But outside of that, I don't really know how much intrigue this game has for me. What are you sickos looking for?
Well, Andy, I mean, I got to give you a chance here to talk about Justin, because you literally wrote on the outline, is Justin Fields more Lamar Jackson or Steve Young, or is he the best of both?
Yeah, I'm so excited. Obviously, I've been a Bears fan for a really long time, and I've never seen a good quarterback in this associated with this franchise. It's been a while. Last week was really fun. It the best kind of loss, right? If you gotta lose, make it a coming out party for your young quarterback. He's rushed for 408 yards in the last four games. And I don't know why it took until, you know, before 5 weeks into the season to try to redesign the offense around the best traits of your most important player. But they did finally get around to it, and we're getting about a half dozen design runs per game. And they're encouraging him, obviously, to take off when the first read isn't there. First read, no second read, and he goes, and it's great. He was phenomenal against Miami. They spied him and it didn't matter, because he just roasted the spy. Like it was great. Really hard to find fault in that game. He was much better than his receivers. Claypool had, guess what I would call a drop. Equanimeous St. Brown had a drop, in key situations too. Beautiful ball to Mooney for the touchdown. Beautiful play design on, the fake handoff and the little rollout to Kmet. I just feel like everything is kind of, you know, he's adjusted to the speed of the NFL. And he's so smooth right now. This has been really fun. So he gets Detroit this week, and then it's Atlanta. He gets Detroit again in like week 17 and championship week. So I'm not like, I don't think Justin Fields is going to be like a top five fantasy quarterback just every week going forward, but he is going to have spots that are just absolute, blow up moments for him. And I think this is one of them. I think this is another big week.
Andy, you've worked at Yahoo for, I think, three decades. I've worked here since 2000. What was I hired in, like 2018? I'm pretty sure this is the most excited I've ever seen, like the most bounce in your step, theoretically. I know you're sitting down over there, but the most bounce in your step I've seen you have about the Bears, period, since I've started working here.
I've definitely had moments where, in the past where I was like, here's why Jay Cutler might accidentally have a good fantasy day for you this week. But I've never had this level of enthusiasm for a quarterback. No, he was the guy I wanted on draft night. I couldn't believe they traded for him. It was just super gratifying to see everything he did last week.
I'll just say too, I think this is the game where Amon-Ra St. Brown gets back on track for fantasy.
Star. He's a star.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to tee you up for that one, pal. And, you know, I mean,
I really have not tried to watch the Lions all that much this year.
I mean, hey, again, that's what us sickos have to do. We got to pay attention to all, like, we got to love all 32 of these babies equally. You know, we got to share that love. Amon-Ra St. Brown, though, I think this is a good bounce back game for him. More like healthier now at this point than he has been really since he had that high ankle sprain earlier in the year. The Bears give up a decent bit of production to slot receivers. Last week, I think he was just sort of thwarted by the game script that we talked about earlier. So let's move on to the next game here. Two good teams, although we might get the Case Keenum revenge game, boys. That's exciting. I have literally, because I have so many Josh Allen teams, I have so many Stephon Diggs teams, I've been like revisiting the game logs of like, oh yeah, remember like Case Keenum and Steph Diggs in Minnesota. There's a thing here. Like, I don't have to get too sad about it. So my expectation, I don't know about you two, is that Josh Allen probably does not play in this game, and we do get the Case Keenum revenge game against the Vikings. I don't know. Let me talk to myself here for a second. Revenge game. Like, that team got him paid like a boatload of money by John Elway and the Denver Broncos. Oh, yeah. So maybe no revenge.
Yeah. Look, Case Keenum had – that was the team where he had, you know, his moment to secure generational wealth and have an NFL job whenever he wanted it, you know? You get to the playoffs, have the moment against the Saints, NFC championship game. That's good enough to get a backup role for how long you need it. I do think it's interesting, though, just looking at how the Bills' offense is – how it functions with Josh Allen is – to me, at least, he is just the gravitational force of that offense. Like, on the ground, they expect a lot out of him. Through the air, I mean, it's a pretty high degree of difficulty passing game, and that's because he has, like, the most outrageous arm in the NFL, and because he does make it hard on himself sometimes, but he can hit those throws. I just kind of wonder, like, what this offense looks like with Case Keenum at the helm, because it's just obviously he can't do what Josh Allen does, and the Bills haven't really, to me, they haven't really shown like an offense plan beyond Josh Allen beating in their lineup.
It's funny, Andy, I don't want to bring you down because we just talked about Justin Fields, but like, I'm going to say the name Mitch Trubisky here. When Mitch was the backup last year, it's like, I sort of kind of see that, right? Like, because, I mean, he's not nearly as talented physically. He's not nearly as good at football as we've seen with the Pittsburgh Steelers offense this year as Josh Allen is. But, like, a guy that could move around a little bit. Case Keenum, though, is going to be – he's, like, more of a traditional West Coast quarterback, I think, at least in these days with the Vikings and stuff like that. That's what we saw from him. So, Andy, how much, if at all, are you changing, like, expectations for fantasy players beyond Stephon Diggs in this Bills offense?
Yeah, this has been tough. So I went through the re-ranking process, which, you know, honestly, like, Gabe Davis is so difficult to rank in a normal week, because he's either going to blow up or he's going to give you like two catches for 30 yards. I guess I lean more to the two catches for 30 yards game in this one. Lowered expectations for him. Didn't do much with Diggs. Diggs is just too good a player to sit. So who cares where you rank him necessarily? I can, on the one hand, I can talk myself into maybe seeing a little bit more of Devin Singletary, because you don't have to worry so much about Josh Allen, like, you know, poaching carries near the goal line or just, running the ball in himself. On the other hand, the upside and the ceiling for the offense generally is so much lower when, you know, the whole thing, as Charles said, is really built around the talents of Josh Allen. So plugging a totally dissimilar quarterback into that could get really weird. And there's no reason for me to, you know, like I can't get that excited about Devin Singletary when I no longer think that the Bills are just a lock to reach, you know, 28 points, 31 points, 34 points. I don't think we're there. So Diggs is the one element here that I really trust.
On the Vikings side of this, it's like, I don't even really know what to say about them. They're so like tidy as a team. You know, I don't think Kirk Cousins has, we talked about this yesterday with Dalton, like, Kirk's not having his most efficient season. I mean, he's having his most like shirtless season of all time. That's great job, Kirk. But it's like, you play Justin Jefferson, you play TJ Hawkins, and you play Dalvin Cook, and you know, you can kind of consider Adam Thielen on that like wider, deeper flex borderline. But that's it. Like, the Vikings are a super easy team to figure out at this point. And I appreciate them at least in this season being that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to see Hawkinson's usage after, you know, just showing up with a new team midseason. You don't think of tight end as being a particularly easy position to simply slide onto a new roster in the middle of the year and produce, but he definitely did.
All right. Three of us are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a banger to preview on the other side of this thing. As I promised, it's a banger. Texans at Giants. Charles, let's talk about Saquon Barkley. That's a good running back. Last three backs to go against Houston have absolutely filleted them. Josh Jacobs flays them. Derrick Henry, despite having no passing game, another 200-yard game against the Texans. Miles Sanders, nice game on Thursday night against this Texans defense. I mean, expectations for Saquon Barkley as the, you know, the gravitational force of this offense, obviously very high this week.
Yeah, and I don't see why he wouldn't go off again. He's just on another level. Like when he's healthy, I think it's really is. Just watching from an athletic standpoint is kind of crazy. Because I remember even went through that Jacksonville game a few weeks ago when they closed it out with like 9 straight runs by him, and it's fourth quarter and he's still making people miss in the hole and exploding for 10 yards down the field. I would expect this to be another big game for him. the Texans are pretty bad. They are who we thought they were coming into the season. And, you know, it's these are the games where you expect someone like Saquon Barkley to go off. And unless they just for some reason can't block the Texans defensive line, then you should expect them to go off this week.
On the other side, too, Damian Pierce, I mean, he's been awesome this year. He's got to be at least like first or second up there with Ken Walker in terms of like favorites for offensive rookie of the year, because it always ends up being a running back, even as a wide receiver guy. Is Andy, what do you call me, like a receiver prop reception propagandist or whatever you do on Sunday
influencer
morning? Like,
yeah,
something like that. Either way, I know it always ends up going to a damn running back, so that's probably what's going to happen here. Or quarterback. That's not going to happen this year. So Damian Pierce, really good. But like the Texans passing game hasn't been fun bad. Like they've just been pretty bad, except guys like, you know, Philip Dorsett having success. That tight end I've literally never heard of on Thursday Night Football catching a touchdown. But we might get Nico Collins back in this game. We might get Brandon Cooks back in this game, although I don't know how excited Brandon Cooks is about his position right now. Although, I mean, come on, Brandon, like, what'd you think was going to happen? You signed that big ass extension and then you you want to get traded? Like, I mean, come on, man. What'd you think was going to happen with that
free
one?
Him. But,
I mean, it would be nice. They should.
Like, I mean, Brandon Cooks missed a game just having a sad last week. That's just wild to me. I know we're calling it a wrist injury. Fine. Yeah, he's like he just.
I watched an interview.
Game.
I watched an interview with him this morning, like just a post practice. Like, you know, the reporters all surround him and he's got the phones in the face and all that. That guy looks so miserable, and I get it.
Yeah, he just feels like he's like every week the rest of the season is going to be 5 catches for 60 yards. That's basically what he's done all year. There's very little blow up possibility here in this offense for anyone other than Damian Pierce. I think you and I both entered the season kind of excited to see what we might get from Nico Collins. It's difficult to imagine a blow up week from him as well. It's just not there. But if I can just backtrack to Charles's points about Saquon, nobody has missed against Houston's defense this year. It's like, it's wild. They have given up the most fantasy points to running backs by just a ton. They gave up the only big week to Jonathan Taylor. Khalil Herbert had a huge week against them. Eckler had a huge week against them. The Broncos like combo back situation had a huge week. Like, just nobody's missed. ETN, everybody's getting like 150 against Houston.
Yeah. I'm excited about Wando Robinson. I want to see if they can use him in more real receiver ways as opposed to just little pop gun stuff. Cause I think he's Andy. I know we've talked about Wando Robinson. Like he's, I watching all of his routes and stuff like that. He's got a lot of ability as a contested catch receiver, which is not what I would have thought I'd said about Wando Robinson. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on here. We'll move on though to Jaguars at Chiefs. Charles, what do we got in this game?
Oof. I think we're getting a masterclass from the most underrated player in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes. You know,
that's right, man. Yeah.
the dumbest take that I've had on Twitter, but it gets people upset, so I keep going with it. I think you
were ahead of the curve on that one. You know, you found a sleeper. You put your brand to him.
Yeah.
That's good stuff there. That's good marketing. That's how you ended up. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's how Yahoo discovered you for sure.
Yeah, they were like, this guy
said his ball.
He's ballsy, right? He had the nerve to call Patrick Mahomes the most underrated player in the NFL. After I saw him number 8 on the NFL top 100, I said, underrated, most underrated player in the league right there. But, you know, really, what we're seeing this year with the Chiefs is I think Patrick Mahomes, like, he's kind of entered that Peyton Manning era or level where you're like, as long as we have 15 under center, we're good. we're going to figure out some way to win. I mean, even last week against the Titans, it wasn't the cleanest performance from him, but they still figured out a way to get it done. And I think what's been so impressive to me is, like, as the season has gone along, you're starting to see the Chiefs have plans for these wide receivers that have filled the Tyreek Hill target vacuum. You know, whether it's, you know, Juju going off or MVS picking his spots once in a while. I think that this offense, like, they have a lot of ways to attack you. And I'm not really sure, like, if this Jaguars defense is quite up to this task yet. I think they have potential, like, in the future. Trayvon Walker, if you can get him to be more consistent pass rusher, you might have something there. Tyson Campbell looks like a stud, but as a whole, like, they don't quite have the personnel to slow down who I believe to be the best quarterback in the NFL.
You know what I think is wild about Mahomes' arrival, you know, at a fairly young age at that Peyton Manning level, is where people are just kind of talking around him in the MVP race, right? Like, if you see like mainstream outlets talking about who's the MVP this year, it's Jalen Hurts, it's Tua, it's Geno. Like, there's a whole bunch of like, Patrick Mahomes leads the NFL in passing yards and passing touchdowns and is an actual sorcerer, right? Like, it's wild that he's not leading that discussion to me.
Teammate elevator too. I mean, these guys, yeah. I think Juju's fine, but he's the only guy I would say is, like, even an average starting receiver in this offense. Like, they're at the point too where, you know, Mecole Hardman has, like, an abdominal injury, you know, hasn't practiced for two straight days. I'm like, oh man, that's a, you know, he's been a key player for them so far this year. I wonder if, you know, this opens up the room for Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore. It's like, we're talking about Mecole Hardman, bro. Like, give me a break. this has legitimately been, like, a teammate elevating season for Mahomes. It's why I think he probably is the MVP favorite at this point. And I mean, the takes were out there, man, that when people were all gassed up, myself included, although I didn't say this thing, but, like, I was gassed up about the AFC West. Everybody was gassed up about the AFC West. There were folks out there like, oh man, Mike, the Chiefs finished fourth in this division without Tyreek Hill. And it's like, come on, man.
That's where the Mahomes underrated take came from too. I'm like, you guys are severely underrating how good that guy is if you think the Chiefs are going to be anywhere near fourth in the division.
People have such a difficult time separating, like, good players from good players. It's like, well, who made who, Patrick Mahomes or Tyreek Hill? It's like, well, you know, shoot, man, they can both be good at football and, like, be all right without each other. And that's exactly what we've seen. I think they're obviously, it's fair to ask the questions and stuff like that, but yeah, Mahomes is always gonna be fine. I guess we could talk about the Jaguars in this game too. I guess. I mean, they got Travis Etienne, they got Christian Kirk, Andy. That's good stuff. And to Charles' point too about the defense, I think there's potential here for the future, but the fact that their cornerback room is so, so bad right now, I think the Chiefs will be able to build a lead, and I think the Jaguars will have to throw to get out of it.
One nice thing about Etienne is he can be part of that too, right? So you're just starting him under any circumstances against pretty much any team. Christian Kirk's targets have absolutely come back. Trevor Lawrence made some throws last week. Like, it was kind of Justin Fields week, but Trevor Lawrence was good. Like, that guy's got an arm. You know, there's a couple of head scratching throws every week as well, but that's just a young player thing. But he's definitely been plenty promising this season, I think. It's a big Christian Kirk week though. So I think you're right. Like, they're not quite where the Vikings are, but I think we know exactly who to start from the Jaguars week in and week out.
Colts at Raiders. Hoo boy, I mean, where to start? The Raiders are 6-point favorites. The Raiders blown 3 17-point leads this year. One of the most disappointing units in the entire NFL. They just placed Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow on IR. They're 6-point favorites, at least when we put together this outline. That's where they were. I don't know if that's going to change. I don't know how much it can change. I mean, Sam Ellinger is making his third career start. He's had three different offensive, like, not play callers necessarily, but, like, coordinators, right? Frank Reich, and then Marcus Brady was involved, then he wasn't involved, and now we've got this, what's the guy's name? I mean,
Parks Frazier,
and he's like a pure, I was listening to Randy Mueller on the football GM show talk about this. Like, he's like a pure Frank Reich, like, has been grooming this guy forever, like a pure friends and family hire by Frank Reich.
I had to look up, because I had no idea who this guy was when they announced this week that he was going to be calling plays. So I went to his Wikipedia page, and first I found Frank Reich officiated his wedding.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Shut yes. up.
And oh two, his home was once shot up with 77 rounds in a mistake hit attempt. So Parks Frazier, it's got a little of an interesting backstory here.
He's lived some lives. Wow.
Yeah. He's only like 30 years old too.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's younger than me. It's a little tilting for me, to be honest, that he's younger than I am. There's a yep. dude calling plays in the NFL that he's younger than me. That's not ideal. I'll consider that one for a while. But I mean, dude, Charles, this whole situation. I mean, Andy and I kicked it around on Monday. I've talked with a lot of the other guys. It's bizarre to the point that I'm not even sure I can, like, I don't know if I find it cute. I find the whole thing like a little bit insulting. And not a little bit is to say the least.
Yeah. But stupid.
It's stupid. But this offense though in Indianapolis too, it's like, you know, I don't know what to do with any of these players. Like, I mean, Michael Pittman's been getting a ton of volume, but like Sam Ehlinger's been a joke. Like even the Sam Ehlinger thing is a little bit ridiculous because this guy, like, I keep coming back to this point. When they said they're going to start this guy for the whole season, it's like he's not some promising player. Like he's right. Total rando. I mean, can we get your boy Matt Ryan back in there? I mean,
they gave up on the season essentially at 3-3-1, which I don't think it's a point that really can't be stressed enough. Like when all these crazy things started happening with Jim Irsay and the Colts, it's not like they were, you know, 1-7 trying to, you know, figure out what's next. They were in the playoffs. They were in the playoff race at the time. And I guess, you know, what Jim Irsay had decided for himself and the rest of the organization was that Matt Ryan was not going to be the quarterback for the Colts in 2023, which by itself, I think it's a fine decision. Like,
sure, yeah.
Fine decision. But to avoid, you know, injury payments or guarantees, because I think there's something like a $17 million arrangement that Matt Ryan has. If he can't pass a physical by the time the next football season starts, he gets, you know, a certain amount of money. They didn't want to deal with that, or Jim didn't want to deal with that, so Matt got sent to the bench. And like you said, the thing with Sam Ehlinger is it's not like, you know, he was drafted in the second round and you're like, oh, maybe he can turn into a starter somewhere down the road. Like, this guy basically played the same role as like Tebow did in college, where you're just kind of like a battering ram and trying to make something happen in the pass game every once in a while. It's really strange to me that a team that is 3-3-1 gave their entire season to a guy who really had no prospects of being an NFL starter. And I think when you watch them play over the past 2 weeks, you see why he was a sixth round pick, you know?
Yeah, there's not a lot to get excited about. This is definitely, though, Andy, like a immovable force, or unstoppable force versus the movable object. There it is. Nailed it. That's podcast hosting right there. Because the Raiders defense, especially their pass defense, has been really, really rough this year.
Yeah. You know what's funny is they've actually, and I get it because they're playing a team that is pretty clearly in tank mode, but the Raiders defense has been one of the most added fantasy entities in our game this week, and you could not have picked up a worse defense. Like, they have 9 sacks on the season. They have 1 sack in the last 3 weeks. They have 3 interceptions on the season. They are the least opportunistic defense out there. And maybe you get a little something from Sam Ehlinger. I don't know, but I mean, he's coming off a game where they couldn't even stay on the field long enough to turn the ball over. Really, like, I don't know. I don't get it with the Raiders defense, because I also don't think we're going to get a lot of pass attempts here, which is, if you're streaming defenses, that's really what you're chasing, right? Like, you just want a game where you think the opposing quarterback is going to throw 45 times. And we are definitely not getting that from Sam. Like, I don't know what we're going to get out of the Colts this week. I have not been breaking down tape of Hebron Christian Academy or whatever. But like, I assume that Jeff Saturday wants to be like a like an establish the run team. And if Jonathan Taylor's back, we're going to get a ton of that. And it just doesn't leave a lot of room for, you know, any defensive goodies for the Raiders.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in response to a, like a some sort of analytics or going for two question from the media, he said something to the effect of like, bruh, yes, and I'm pretty sure he did say bruh, I please play offensive line, like I'm taking the points, it's hard out there or something like that. It's like, I mean, I think that's about what we're going to get from head coach Jeff Saturday. So we'll see. Next game up here, Cardinals at Rams. Oh, man, what a sad affair. Matt Stafford also not practicing today. He's in the concussion protocol. Charles, which team has, and I, you know, it's kind of crazy to say this, which team has worse vibes around it right now? The Cardinals, who, I mean, just depressing as hell, or the Rams, also depressing as hell?
Cardinals, for sure. Because at least if you're the Rams, you can say, hey, we kind of sold our souls for the ring. Like, we got the Super Bowl ring, and this is the, you know, this is the flip side of our roster building strategy, you know.
This is
the come down year that kind of had to happen for them, I think. Unfortunately, you know, you ran out of assets. You don't have an offensive line. It's nothing you can do. But with the Cardinals, you just gave extensions to everybody. Cliff, Kyler, Steve Kahn, everyone got extensions. And this is the product of the first year of that trio being, you know, kept together for the foreseeable future. It's that's alarming, I think. And I think what's most alarming is the Cardinals offense, there's no innovation left. Like it's stale. It doesn't really feel like they're trying to do anything that's forcing defenses to be, you know, restricted on the back end, or, you know, just confuse people in general. It's just they're really reliant on their talent. And I think, you know, you're seeing DeAndre Hopkins play pretty well, but the rest of the guys, they're just not getting a whole lot of help from the coaching staff. And in the same breath, like Kyler Murray needs to play better too. It's just it's all bad, and you don't have the recency bias of a Super Bowl like the Rams do to kind of make you feel better about what's happening today.
And right on schedule here in like week 10, Kyler Murray has a hamstring injury now. So we're about at that chapter of the Arizona Cardinals season, although we missed like the good vibes building earlier part of the year where they trick people with a decent record. That didn't even happen this year. Now we're at the Kyler Murray's injured part. Andy, we also might get John Wolford in this game. I mean, like legitimately that right now, I think that's probably what's going to happen. We have seen John Wolford in the past. Like Sean McVay wanted to start John Wolford over over Jared Goff at different points at the end of that relationship as well.
Yeah, we have one regular season start from Wolford. It was a win over Arizona, a no touchdown pass win over Arizona. They built the whole offense around Cam Akers, who was pretty inefficient that day, but all they did was feed the ball to running backs and tight ends. So we didn't learn a whole lot about Wolford. Like you can trust Cooper Kupp here because he's great. And there are no other Rams that I think you can play. The running back situation is just an absolute mess right now. It's probably Daryl Henderson. They don't seem to want any of the running backs on this team necessarily, which feels like a problem. But yeah, I think if it's Wolford, you can really only trust Kupp.
Yeah, Kyren Williams sounds like he'll make his big debut. But again, similar with the Sam Ellinger thing, it's like this is a six-round running back like who is really good in pass protection. Like that's our hero here. We've given this
game coming enough off a high ankle injury that required surgery, right? Like nobody should have any expectations for him.
All right, we've given this game enough.
Yeah, a little bit too much.
A little bit too much there. Cowboys at Packers. Andy, how ugly is this going to get for Rodgers? I mean, he's also got his old buddy Mike McCarthy coming into town. You know, Mike McCarthy's going to ride the bike down Mike McCarthy way right in here to embarrass Aaron Rodgers. You know, I mean, what is this going to, and like they lost Romeo Dobbs is like a fourth round pick, fifth round pick. He's a day three rookie receiver. And it's like, man, they've lost Romeo Dobbs. What are they going to do now?
Rodgers felt a little bit, I don't know, like he almost felt exposed in that game against the Lions, because it was a game where you couldn't just say, oh man, it's his receiving core. Oh man, it's the line. I mean, his turnovers were just ghastly, right? Like severe underthrows. Hit a lion in the face with a throw. Like this is, it's a combination of a lot of things, and part of it is definitely on Aaron Rodgers, and maybe it's the injury. Maybe that plays a role here, but he's already up to like 7 interceptions on the season, which does not sound like a lot, but by his standards, that's crazy. He's like, he doesn't finish seasons with double digit interceptions, but it's definitely happening here. He looked like he and Sammy Watkins had never met before the game. They were like the targets to Sammy Watkins were nowhere near him. So that was wild. It's just a pretty hopeless situation. They're not even averaging 16 points per game over their last 5. And they've had some great, like Detroit was the get right game. And it all just got a little bit worse. Aaron Jones is dinged now, probably going to play. But, you know, that doesn't help when your best player, like your one just truly gifted skill player is hobbled a little bit. Like this is going to get messy in a hurry.
The thing with Sammy Watkins, it's so funny to me, is like, yeah, you say it looked like they never met. And Watkins has been, I mean, one of the worst. I think he's been the worst receiver in the NFL this year. I mean, he looks toast. Yeah. Beyond toast. They planned on Sammy Watkins like being a big part of this offense. Like they planned to walk into the season with Sammy Watkins as one of the top outside receivers on this team. So I don't, it's just one of the most disjointed like things I can ever remember. On the Cowboys side of this though, they're coming off their bye week. You know, the Packers pass defense has been better than their run defense. You know, Zeke is still not 100%. This could definitely be another big Tony Pollard week, even if they don't want to give him the bulk of the carries, or they want to keep him to 30 snaps or whatever the hell the idea is there in Dallas. I think either way, another big Tony Pollard week seems like it's on the horizon here.
Yeah, I would love to talk myself into a higher rank on Pollard. I just fear, you know, the possibility of Zeke coming back. And again, we've talked about it. Like Zeke's been fine this year. He's not been this huge problem for the Cowboys. And if you want to run Zeke between the tackles and let Tony Pollard do all the fun stuff, that's cool. But as we get, you know, as the news hasn't been great on Zeke this week, except from Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones always talks about it as if, oh yeah, he's definitely going out there, and my zillion dollar running back is for sure gonna play, you know, a ton of snaps and get 20 touches. But what we actually hear from Zeke and everything that filters out from the team doesn't sound nearly as encouraging. It would sure simplify the situation a ton if it boils down to just Pollard again. If that happens against Green Bay's defense, as bad as they've been against the run this year, Pollard be a top 5 guy again.
All right, we got a couple fun games here for the night ones. Sunday Night Football, Chargers at 49ers. 49ers are 7-point favorites. This game, I mean, a lot of good players, should be a lot of fun. I'm curious, Charles, how do you see this one playing out? Just because the Chargers have been definitely disappointing this year. They have layers of injuries. Like these are probably the two most banged up, like just consistently injured teams in the entire NFL. So, oh boy, we'll see. We'll see who comes out of this one. but I am excited at least to see on the 49ers side all of these guys all together at the same time, because we haven't seen like a fully integrated CMC with a healthy Debo. I'm assuming Debo's healthy coming out of the bye. Like this all should be, I just can't wait to see how this gets deployed and like who falls where within the target pecking order.
Yeah, it's also a good defense to come out and have like a coming out party together. If last week's game against the Falcons was any indication, because the Falcons, they had moments where they were just running down the field against the Chargers. And, you know, that's a team that maybe not standings wise, but when you look at the roster talent wise, it's still very much in a rebuilding mode. So I think if you're at the 49ers, you know, you should be coming out kind of expecting to be able to get whatever you want against this Chargers defense. Like the linebacker play has been really bad. The interior play hasn't been that much better. And like you said, they're really banged up on the defensive side of the ball. So I think this is a game where you can see a lot of like multiple 49ers players have big games because they just have like a really severe talent advantage over the Chargers defense. Like I think the only thing that I'll be worried about is if this gets into like blowout territory, like kind of early, because on the flip side, I think Justin Herbert is one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, but the offensive supporting cast from like a play calling standpoint and a health standpoint is not really allowing him to put up like these big production games. Like I thought the game he played on Sunday against Atlanta was like masterful when you go back and watch the tape. But then when you look at the stats, he finishes with like 250 yards on 5 yards in the attempt. And I was like, wow, they're, you know, constipated on offense for lack of a better term. So, you know, I think maybe some game script stuff could get out of hand if the 49ers get up big, and maybe that won't help you get the receiving totals you're looking for. But I think in general, 49ers offense for a lot of guys should be the play.
Yeah, I got a feeling Eckler's going to be coming into Tuesday's taping pretty tired from catching like another 13 balls on 17 targets or whatever, given just the state of this pass catching room. Andy, how you feeling about this one from like a fantasy angle?
To Charles's point, thinking back to last week with Justin Herbert, he got them out of some pretty impressive like third and long situations, finding like leaning on Josh Palmer. Like it felt like the whole first half Josh Palmer was catching, you know, and Josh Palmer doesn't do anything after the catch, or at least didn't last week, right? Like it was a lot of like catch and fall stuff.
No, but never. He never does. Yeah,
but I mean, Herbert.
But it's
was
great that they get those dudes out in space so often. It's great. It's great that they
exactly. I mean, like that's what they're down to. They're down to like kick returners. And hey, I've been there with like in years of Bears fandom. I've rooted for teams that were down to like kick returners and guys who should not be starting wide receivers. Like that's my whole life as a football fan. And that's kind of where the Chargers were. And Herbert was. Man, it was a really impressive performance. I thought as well from Herbert, and it just didn't add up to anything really fantasy wise. On the other side, we talked about how easy this team is to run on, like, and Charles mentioned it as well, like just like the first series from Atlanta was like 40-yard carry for Tyler Algier and Patterson just getting whatever he wanted, 8 yards a pop, right? Like this is a super friendly run defense. I didn't know, like between like Barkley having an incredible matchup this week against Houston and McCaffrey having this gift of a matchup against Chargers, like I've flipped those two as like my RB1 on the week. I can imagine either one of them having like a 4-touchdown week, right? Like you can... I mean, backs can just get it whatever they want against the Chargers. They give up 5.7 yards per carry, which is just a hilarious number.
Andy, don't hide your sicko traits here from Charles either, because you did write an Isaiah Spiller note on the outline.
Yeah, go ahead with that.
I mean, I thought it was interesting that Spiller like saw the field last week, and he saw the field like pretty early. Like we'd kind of thought that, you know, because fantasy manager, you have to keep track of who was backing up Austin Eckler. And it seemed like it was Spiller last week. Like that wasn't just like end of game stuff. No, it was a close game the entire way, but like Spiller was clearly in the plans and was on the field early in the game and seemed to play ahead of Sony Michel, which is just a little thing to take note of.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, I'm making the joke here, Andy, but I am also a disgusting sicko. And in my, my best like redraft team is pretty much anchored by CMC and Nick Chubb. So I was in dire straits last week at running back. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'll throw Sony Michel. He's on waivers. I'll throw him. And all my other backups are hurt, bye weeks, all that stuff. So it's just hell. I was like, I'll throw Sony Michel out there against the Falcons. Maybe he'll pop in a random touchdown because Josh Kelly's hurt. And it's like, oh, nope, he's been jumped by Spiller. So there's that on that. But yeah, that is an important thing to note for running back stash season there towards the end of the year. Last game up here, NFC East special, Commanders at the Eagles. The Eagles are 11-point favorites. Charles, you shaking your head over there. Taylor Heineke, I mean, is he going to survive this one? I want him to survive. I want ODU's finest to survive because he gets the ball to Terry McLaurin, and that's literally all I care about. But, I mean, this could get pretty ugly.
Yeah, let me start with this. I tend to think that Taylor Heineke is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz.
I agree.
But the last
not
time
saying
these
much,
two,
but.
Not saying much, but the last time these two teams played, the Eagles sacked Carson Wentz, I want to say 9 times. Beyond just your quarterback holding the ball, holding onto the ball too long, that leads to sacks, which obviously happens like every time Carson Wentz plays. The Eagles have a huge talent advantage in the when it comes to their defensive line versus the Commander's offensive line. So I would expect Terry to still get his, just because, you know, he's kind of like the only consistent option that they have. But the rest of the offense, I think it's going to be tough because, you know, a lot of these plays, they're just going to be dead as soon as the ball snap, because, like I said, there's a huge talent mismatch on the offensive line, defensive line.
I believe, by the way, that McLaurin is the only receiver to go over 100 yards against Philly this year. He barely did it, but he did do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happened at like the end of the game too, right? It took forever. Yeah. Cause that was still a peak. Like, and again, Andy, I've said this many times in the podcast, I love Curtis Samuel. I'm like a longtime Curtis Samuel bro, but this was still in the, like, okay, you're overdoing the Curtis Samuel stuff, like, early in the year, you know. They were still in that mode. I think they've gotten it right with, like, the target distribution being McLaurin 28%, Samuel at like 18%, and your guy Antonio Gibson at about 15-16%. And I feel like this is actually a good spot for Antonio Gibson, who you know, the Eagles, they have it. You're right, Chuck, there's a huge talent disparity at the offensive defensive line there for this game. At the same time, though, the Eagles are 31st in rushing success rate allowed. Like, yeah, you're going to beat this defense one way. You are going to run on them. Antonio Gibson, Brian Robinson, kind of a 50-50-ish split there. But Gibson is getting the passing down work at this point. J.D. McKissic, like, saw neck specialist last week and is not practicing this week.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty wide talent gap between Gibson and Robinson, but the Commanders don't always treat it as such. I think Gibson is McLaurin is clearly the safest play here. I think Gibson is right behind him. And if you are in the unfortunate situation that I am in a couple of places where I actually have both Robinson and Gibson, I'm treating.
How'd you
Robinson
back yourself into
backup.
That?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. Mistakes were made. it wasn't ideal, but yeah, like you can't roll out. Made. They were made. you can't roll with Brian Robinson, especially in this one. There's no way that game flow in this thing is going to suit Brian Robinson.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when they picked him in the second round. I was like, wow, really? That's interesting, because I
think it was third. It was third round, but still,
third round,
regardless. Yeah,
yeah. I was just like, man, I kind of had him pegged as like a late day three, just like we just need someone to fill a space for us. But
yeah and it's tough too, because obviously he's overcome a lot. Brian Robinson, like, I don't want to sit here and say bad things about about Brian Robinson. His freaking team is doing that. Did you guys see the statement about?
Yeah.
Dude, we didn't even talk about this. Like, this team's having a week right now.
Yeah.
They're always having a week. Like, there's never a calm moment. And then for them to say, like, wow, I can't believe that they're going to investigate us when one of our players was shot. I'm like, what does that have to do with that? That's crazy.
Yeah, and you're in the crime-ridden streets of D.C. or whatever they basically implied there. I mean, absolutely unreal stuff. It almost makes Jim Irsay look normal. Almost. I mean, but he's the one who called out Dan Snyder too. It's like, I mean, not a good situation.
I mean, we might say that Irsay is in the top quartile of the top quartile of normal in the league.
Yes, perhaps in the upper quartile of the quartile. And by the way, we'll talk, just touch real quick on the Eagles here. I mean, they shredded this team last time.
Yeah.
Last time we saw him, week three, Hurts went crazy through the air. Devontae Smith had a big game. I actually think, like, I know Devontae Smith's been a little quiet in fantasy the last couple weeks. This could be a big bounce back game for him. But, like, I mean, this is just like an everybody in the pool type of game for the Eagles, who I've talked about several tidy teams. They're the tidiest team in the NFL right now, because it's just like they're big four dudes and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, you start them all. It was not a competitive game last time, but it went as well as it could fantasy wise for not being a competitive game, because everybody went off. You know, touchdowns for Brown, Smith, Goddard, Hurts went crazy. It was 24-0 at half, and then you know, they kind of shut it down.
All right, that is going to do it for us. We appreciate you, Charles, for gracing us with your presence to talk about, you know, such storied NFL legends as Jalen Warren, Isaiah Spiller, Jeff Wilson. I mean, that is, thank God we had you here to break this one down, buddy.
The disrespect. Well,
you needed my expertise. I definitely wasn't the guy on Sunday when I was watching the Falcons-Chargers game and I see 28 with Spiller in the back. I was like, CJ? That was
They wish.
So what year is it?
Oh, man. Good stuff. Well, we appreciate it. You can follow Charles on Twitter at @4verts. You can follow Andy at @AndyBarons. And if you want to, wouldn't suggest it, you can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. If you don't feel like following us, I get it. You can follow at Yahoo Fantasy, and they'll retweet our good tweets into your timeline if and when we have them. As always, Scott will be back with me on Monday morning to recap this great week. I mean, it's not a great week. this slate of games, week 10, he'll be back to recap all of them on Monday morning. Until then, we're out.